It wasn't him, Charlie!
It was you. You remember that night in the garden? You came down to my dressing room and said, "Kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson." You remember that?
This ain't your night. My night! I could have taken Wilson apart! So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark. And what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville.
You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me. Just a little bit. So I wouldn't have to take all them dives for the short end money. You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. Instead of a bum. Which is what I am. Let's face it. It was you, Charlie.
I decided not to make weird noises up next to Jinxers. That was heaven that we just heard.
It wasn't him, Charlie! It was you. You remember that night in the garden? You came down to my dressing room and said, "Kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson." You remember that? This ain't your night. My night! I could have taken Wilson apart! So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark. And what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie! You should have looked out for me a little bit! You should have taken care of me just a little bit! So I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short end money. You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. Instead of a bum. Which is what I am. Let's face it. It was you, Charlie.
Axel Dinn is up next.
It wasn't him, Charlie. It was you. You remember that night in the garden? You came down to my dressing room and said, "Kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson." You remember that? This ain't your night. My night. I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark. And what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You could have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me, just a little bit, so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the shirt and money. You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody, instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it, it was you, Charlie.
Up next is Russ.
It wasn't him, Charlie. It was you. You remember that night in the garden? He came down to my dressing room and said, "Kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson." You remember that? This ain't your night. My night? I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money. You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it. It was you, Charlie.
It was the monologue battle of the night. We always have one, guys.
I was moved.
You do.
I was moved to tears.
I was, like, moved out of my seat, and then I was sat back down because I could not handle how awesome it was.
Who's talking right now?
Emily.
The robot.
Okay. Emily had, like, a a happiness-ness thing going
had
on.
Had a fit.
Let's start with Heaven's monologue was first.
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Loved it. One of my favorites from you ever. Your voice kind of sounded like George Costanza from Seinfeld, I'm not going to lie. But I really liked the read over it all. It was a pretty epic one. What did you think, Chandler? Why do I keep calling you? What did you think, Maud?
I loved the emotion. I loved the accent. Like, you kept everything steady and going throughout the entire thing. It felt really real to me, and I loved it.
Emily?
I was making faces the whole time, and Chandler can attest to this. And when I'm excited, I'd have this way of, like, flailing my hands like an otter. And I was doing that. So that's good. That's, yes.
Heaven, you made her flail like an otter.
Mm-hmm. Otter hands.
Jinxer's best monologue so far from you on the show. I thought you picked up the emotion and picked your places, and I thought this was epic win from you as well. Great, great job. What did you think, Emily?
I think it
Did you say
he Emily? Said Yemily? No,
it sounded like
Yemily.
You said Melly. Okay.
No, I said Emily.
But it had a Y at the beginning, so it was like Yemily.
It was Yemily.
It was like yelling.
What
Emily.
Did you think, Yemily?
Yell, I think, I thought I heard. I don't know what I'm doing with that voice. Stop that, please. No. Oh, okay. She hit me good. it was, like, really amazing. And, like, in it reminded me of Newsies, which is, like, currently one of my favorite musicals. And I just wanted to, like, shove you in, like, a cap, like, the people who sell newspapers in, like, the 20s and awesome stuff.
Jinxer's is too metal for that.
I don't care. I don't care. You need, like, a vest, and...
She wanted to dress you up.
Yeah. it made me happy and sad.
Happy and sad?
Happy because I was sad.
Nice. Small, what did you think?
Because...
I'm cutting you off, Yemily.
Fine.
I thought that it had, like, a really, really good start, and that, like, right away caught my attention, and you were... really emotional, really, like, aggravatedly angry, and I loved it. This was definitely, like, one of my... Like, this is my favorite from you. It really is.
Emily, did you want to say anything else about this?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay.
I made my point.
Axelden, we'll start with you this time, Emily.
Again? Okay.
We start with me the first and second time. Now we're starting with you.
I always just think about starting because it's Chandler and me.
But
and then
I'm also here.
Okay.
I exist as well.
Okay, Dylan. Fine. It was awesome. I can't even lie. I lost my train of thought now. Thanks, Dylan.
You're welcome. really not? Do you really want... You don't have anything to say about this?
I come back
She's
to
sort
me.
Of speechless. Okay.
Yeah, I'm speechless.
Do you want to go to you, Maud, or do you want to go to me?
I'll go.
Okay, go. All
right. I feel like it's a little bit rushed, and I don't know, I feel like sometimes, Axel, like you try to go with accents, but you can't hold them together that well when it comes to throwing emotion in there as well, which... I don't know, like, I feel like if you just sort of worked on combining the two, then you'd be golden.
Yeah, he said in the chat he was going to start doing accents because he said that people that do accents get through, and I was thinking, maybe not the best idea, but I didn't say that, and I didn't say anything to you about it, but I don't think the accent was a great choice. I don't think people that do accents do well on the show just because they're doing accents, because Chekichi did an accent in, like, week one that was horrific. And I hated it, and she's no longer on the show.
It's like, it can either make it or break it, yeah. Really.
But
depends on effort?
Well,
it's not even on the grasp of
the accent.
Yeah. Okay.
The accent made no difference to me as far as what I thought of this. I just thought you were going so fast, and, like, at the end of the monologue, it's written, it says pause. It was you, Charlie, and you didn't pause there either. So it was just really quick. It was really quick and rushed, and... I think I said this to you last week. I think you need to mark on your monologue where you're going to change up things because it was kind of all one note, but it was all, like, it was all big and rushed, but there wasn't a lot of, like, there wasn't any, like, quiet going on, and don't be afraid to take, like, a beat to draw us in. I maybe said that to Copper, actually, but it was a little rushed for me. Back to you, Emily.
Nope, still.
All right, moving on to Russ. We will not start with Yemily ever again.
I'm sorry, I'm terrible.
You're the worst, Yemily.
I shouldn't be.
Why are you here, Yemily? You're the worst. I invite you on as a guest. You don't even acknowledge that I exist.
I'm just going to cry.
Do
forever.
It. Do it, Yemily. Cry your robot tears of oil. Malt, what did you think of Russ?
I feel like it's probably just because of, like, the tone of your voice, but it gave it, like, a sort of more mature feel. Like, the emotion wasn't so, like, spitfire, but it was really good emotion. And I thought it gave an entirely different meaning, and it was really good.
For me personally, I felt like it was a little bit broad, your performance. I thought Jinxers and Heaven both took it to a very real place, and yours was a little bit acty for me. But I'm probably in the minority because Malt really liked it. I liked it as well. Like, you always give solid monologues. Sometimes I think you make certain choices and you commit to the choices, but they don't always pan out. What did you think, Yemily?
To me, it kind of sounded like it felt like it was the manager talking about the boxer, not so much the actual person, which I don't know how to put that. Like, maybe it's not the right emotion, but it still was good. So yeah. I don't sure how to explain it.
Well, did you two pick winners?
I think so.
I believe I did, yeah.
I picked a winner as well. Who would like to say their winner first?
I'll do it.
This monologue is worth 8 points. Who did you pick, Malt?
I was actually tied between two, and it was really, really a difficult choice. But I went with Jinxers because the star on it sold me.
What about you, Yemily?
Jinxers also stole my heart away.
Yeah, when I heard
my
Heaven,
robo heart.
When I heard Heaven's, I was like, probably no one's gonna beat this. But Jinxers came right after when he beat it for me too. So barely. It was really close between Heaven and Jinxers. Russ and Ashley, you guys also did awesome jobs. Jinxers gets the points for Team Oscar. And how many points is it? It's 8 points to Team Oscar. Next up, we have, holy crap, what am I doing? I'm zoning out. Okay, I'm good. It's weird recording in Audacity when the other people can't talk. It makes me uncomfortable. Thank you. That's not helping. 1955, The 7-Year Itch, 5 points. I'm going to set it up now. 7-Year Itch, 1955, Billy Wilder, George Axelrod, Summer Rituals in New York City, the comic opening voiceover monologue by the narrator told about the virtually identical summer rituals of the Manhattan Indians and Manhattanites 500 years later. Husbands would say goodbye to their wives and then follow after attractive females a moment later. JC up first on this one. Let's listen.
The island of Manhattan derives its name from its earliest inhabitants, the Manhattan Indians. They were a peaceful tribe, setting traps, fishing, hunting, and there was a custom among them. Every July, when the heat and the humidity on the island became unbearable, they would send their wives and children away for the summer, up the river to the cooler highlands, or, if they could afford it, to the seashore. The husbands, of course, would remain behind on the steaming island to attend to business, setting traps, fishing, and hunting. Actually, our story has nothing whatsoever to do with Indians. It plays 500 years later. We only brought up the subject to show you that in all that time, nothing has changed. Manhattan husbands still send their wives and kids away for the summer, and they still remain behind in the steaming city to attend to business, setting traps, fishing, and hunting. Now, we want you to meet a typical Manhattan husband whose family is leaving for the summer.
That was JC.
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
That it was.
I liked it a lot. It sounded like an old-timey, like, ad salesman or something.
So it's making me happy. Yeah, it sounded like something that you'd hear, like, on, like, the
Mad Men.
The radio shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an old-timey radio show.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
You just need, like, the crackly sound over it and, like, the people sitting around a huddled thing. I'm imagining things.
I'm imagining him in a nice, dapper, Brill cream-induced haircut.
Exactly.
With a nice fedora and a trench coat. With
a
nothing
little double
duty. Yeah.
Okay, Dylan, getting a little too far into your fantasies there.
Hey, it's okay. I was thinking about the Newsies earlier.
Exactly. She wants to dress Jinxers in Newsies. I want to dress JC in a trench coat with nothing underneath it.
You get to dress someone else, too.
Who would you like to dress up, Malt?
Yeah, Chan.
Shanty pants?
Come on, Shanty pants.
No, you know what? I'm leaving.
I want to dress Russ and Reed as superheroes. Please, somebody make that happen.
You know me.
I want Emily to draw Reed as Juverine and Russ as Professor X.
Oh my god.
In a wheelchair.
In a wheelchair.
Yes. Professor X is in a wheelchair, in case you didn't know. But Russ is not bald and he doesn't have telepathic powers.
It depends on which canon, actually, because Marvel is kind of iffy about that one.
Well, I want you to make it happen.
Okay. Wheelchair.
Okay. And I want Reed to be a Wolverine.
Okay.
Okay.
Like an actual Wolverine or like...
No, I think he should be like Logan. Like Logan, yeah. Jinxer's the only... what is wrong with me? JC, the only one on that monologue. Getting 5 points for Team Oscar. Team Oscar's doing awesome tonight, you guys.
They might be going to the Oscars.
They've won all of their monologues. No one has, actually.
Really?
And I only recently...
I'm disappointed.
I only recently figured out that's probably why they're named Team Oscar.
Oh.
It just might be. Oh. The one-point monologue is up next. Nobody did it. So Malt's so going sad. To read it.
That's disappointing.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1956. Screenwriters Daniel Mainwaring. Haunting voiceover narration. Dr. Miles Bunnell's haunting opening voiceover about how the town had changed and how his office had been besieged by patients in a near epidemic during his absence. Go, Malt.
For me, it started last Thursday. In response to an urgent message from my nurse, I hurried home from a medical convention I'd been attending. At first glance, everything looked the same. It wasn't. Something evil had taken possession of the town. Sick people who couldn't wait to see me then suddenly were perfectly all right. A boy who said his mother wasn't his mother. A woman who said her uncle wasn't her uncle.
That was terrible, Malt.
Wow, Emily.
1 point to Malt. No points to Emily because she's being mean.
Thank you.
I don't even care. That should have been much scarier.
Let's hear you do it.
No.
Okay, then.
I can't read anything.
Okay, then STFU.
Yeah.
1957, The Incredible Shrinking Man. We do have people on this monologue.
Ooh.
Ooh. It's worth 6 points, and I'm going to set it up. Screenwriter Richard Matheson, I Still Exist speech, Scott Carey's final narrated soliloquy as he shrank out of sight, but realized that he was still important in the scheme of the universe. We have 3 people on this monologue. I'm going to announce them as they come up. But first up is Copper. Let's listen to Copper and his sexiness.
I was continuing to shrink. To become... what? The infinitesimal? What was I? Still a human being? Or was I a man of the future? If there were other bursts of radiation, other clouds drifting across seas and continents, would other things begin to follow me into this vast new world? So close... the infinitesimal, and the infinite. But suddenly I knew there really were two ends to the same concept. The unbelievably small, and the unbelievably vast eventually meet, like the closing of a gigantic circle. I looked up as if somehow I would grasp the heavens, the universe, worlds beyond number, God's silver tapestry spread across the night. And in that moment, I knew the answer to the riddle of the infinite. I had thought in terms of man's own limited dimension. I had presumed upon nature that existence begins and ends is man's conception, not nature's. And I felt my body dwindling, melting, becoming nothing. My fears melted away, and in their place came acceptance. All this vast majesty of creation, it had to mean something. And then I meant something too. Yes, smaller than the smallest, I meant something too. To God, there is no zero. I still exist.
Jeffers up next.
I was continuing to shrink to become... what? The infinitesimal? What was I? Still a human being? Or was I the man of the future? If there were other bursts of radiation, other clouds drifting across seas and continents, would other beings follow me into this vast new world? So close, the infinitesimal and the infinite. But suddenly, I knew they were really two ends of the same concept. The unbelievably small and the unbelievably vast eventually meet, like the closing of a gigantic circle. I looked up, as if somehow I would grasp the heavens. The universe, worlds beyond numbers, God's silver tapestry spread across the night. And in that moment, I knew the answer to the riddle of the infinite. I had thought in terms of man's own limited dimension. I had presumed upon nature, that existence begins and ends is man's conception, not nature's. And I felt my body dwindling, melting, becoming nothing. My fears melted away, and in their place came acceptance. All this vast majesty of creation, it had to mean something. And then, I meant something too. Yes, smaller than the smallest, I meant something too. To God, there is no zero. I still exist.
And the other person on this monologue is Zigbar. Take it away, Zigbar.
I was continuing to shrink. To become... what? The infinitesimal? What was I? Still a human being? Or was I the man of the future? If there were other bursts of radiation, other clouds drifting across the seas and continents, would other beings follow me into this vast new world? So close, the infinitesimal and the infinite. But suddenly, I knew they were really the two ends to the same concept. The unbelievably small and the unbelievably vast eventually meet. Like the closing of a giant circle, I looked up, as if somehow I would grasp the heavens, the universe, worlds beyond number, God's silver tapestry spread across the night. And in that moment, I knew the answer to the riddle of the infinite. I had thought in terms of man's own limited dimensions. I had presumed upon nature that existence begins and ends is man's conception, not nature's. And I felt my body dwindling, melting, becoming nothing. My fears melted away, and in their place came acceptance. All this vast majesty of creation, it had to mean something. And then I meant something too. Yes, smaller than the smallest. And I meant something too. I still exist.
That was Zigbar.
That was Zigbar.
Those are the three people on that monologue.
Oh, yeah.
I know. We'll start with Copper. Let's start with you, Malt.
Alright. I really liked your tone in this, but I feel like there were times where you just weren't excited enough. Like, and it's probably just, like, my personal take on the monologue, and that's probably why. Like, you had really good emotion. I just feel like it wasn't the right kind of emotion.
Kind of sounded like he was reading a book to a child. And, like, what's going on in this is he's, like, shrinking out of sight. So, and then he realized he was still important. I don't know. I didn't really get that realization there. It just kind of sounded like you had an interesting tone, but it sounded like you were, like, talking to a child. I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of your read on this. What did you think, Emily?
I kind of agree with you, Dylan. but I don't think it sounded like he was reading Grace and the Child. I think it was the excited kid in English class who wanted to do good.
Well, that's a good point. He did do good. Yes. I like that you said English class and then do good, which is not proper English. Clearly you were not that excited kid in English class.
No, I didn't speak.
I could hear that. I really want you to try to internalize your stuff more, Copper, because sometimes I feel like you, on one side, you're like, I'm going to do this emotion, and on the other side, you have the monologue that you're reading, but they don't ever really come together like you're actually speaking the words. And I'd like you to really try and internalize your monologues a little bit more. I think that would help you a lot.
You got to, like, make it mean something to you.
Yes. Jeffers, I was a big fan of the way you read yours because you got kind of low and whispery with it. And while, I don't know, it's hard because, like, when I read these monologues and, like, I read the setup, I have a certain way I envision them being read. And most of the time they aren't read that way, and that's fine because a lot of times they're read better than I would expect. And this is one of those, like, it wasn't read how I thought it was going to be read, but I liked what he did with it. What did you think, Malt?
I agree. Like, I really liked how he got really low at some points. Like, he was, like, telling us a secret kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, and once again, it's probably just, like, a issue with my computer right now, but, like, it got so quiet at times, I couldn't hear you at all.
So but, I didn't have that problem.
Yeah. It's just our side.
It's probably just our side over here. But, like, I didn't let it affect it. Like, I really loved the emotion in it. You had a really good start, and I, like, you definitely had that sort of sense of wonder, mm-hmm. like, towards the beginning that I was really looking for.
What did you think, Emily?
I think it had, like, a really good range in it, which is kind of what you guys said, but I said a different word. I used the word range. And I liked, like, the build at the end made me really happy. And it was just, like, you could really feel that he accepted the thing. And it was mm-hmm. I just really liked this monologue. I have a lot of feelings about it.
And then Zigbar brought back his hipster scientist character from the Dracula monologue that I love.
I was there for that.
Were you? Yeah, you were.
Kind of.
She was in the room.
I making
comments about things.
I didn't feel like you really knew where to take it because the end it kind of fizzled out and I didn't feel like you really knew what to do with it at the end. But I liked your read on it overall. What did you think, Malt?
I'm seriously in love with his accent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really am. Just letting you know that, Zigbar. So, like, I liked, once again, it had the emotion and the wonder that I was sort of looking for. But I feel like it was a little, like, you paced it really slowly, I think. But I don't think it was really a bad thing because there was actually a point in it where I actually just got sort of in a trance listening mm-hmm. because your voice was just, like, really soothing and I didn't actually lose the monologue. So that was a big plus for me.
What did you think, Emily?
I loved the slowness of it. It was just like, oh, the pacing. It just made me want to, like, dig in more to the story. Like, yes, tell me more.
Tell me more, you magnificent bastard.
Yes.
Did you guys pick winners?
I think so.
Yes.
All right. Well, I picked Jeffers. Who did you pick, Malt?
I picked Jeffers as well.
And Yemily?
I picked Ziggy.
Well, too bad Jeffers gets the points.
Oh, no.
But good try, all of you guys. Jeffers gets 6 points for Team Heaven Sucks. Woo. Woo. Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, worth 2 points from 1958. Nobody did it, so Chandler's going to read.
Oh, woo-hoo.
Screenwriters Richard Brooks and James Poe. Maggie's tortured without love speech. Maggie Pullitt's longing pleading to an unresponsive and possibly gay husband, Brick. Brick, you know what that rhymes with? Flick.
Of course.
Go ahead, Shanty Pants, whenever you're ready.
All right. Why can't you lose your good looks, Brick? Most drinking men lose theirs. Why can't you? I think you've even gotten better looking since you went on the bottle. You were such a wonderful lover. You were so exciting to be in love with. Mostly, I guess, because you were... If I thought you'd never, never make love to me again, why, I'd find me the longest, sharpest knife I could find, and I'd stick it straight into my heart. I'd do that. Brick, how long does this have to go on? The punishment? Haven't I served my term? Can't I apply for a pardon?
That was much better than your last read.
Well, you're a bitch.
I love you, though.
Why are you critiquing Chanty Pants?
Yeah.
Because it's my job as her wife.
Well, Dylan's my platonic boyfriend, so.
That's acceptable. I'm also her divorce lawyer.
Yes. How many mistresses do you have?
That doesn't have to be mentioned.
Platonic boyfriends? You have other platonic boyfriends? Are they considered mistresses?
Yes.
Actually, no. Yes, they are. All she's chicks, lying. Sorry.
They're all chicks?
She's lying.
Oh, I can beat chicks.
Yeah, you're the only guy. You should be proud.
I don't know if I should feel proud or, like, smothered and stalked.
You should feel proud.
Okay, I feel proud.
But also stalked.
Last monologue of the night, 1959, Some Like It Hot. It's worth 7 points. And Janie and Sundance Girl on it. Theater Bound also dropped.
Aww.
What a bitch. Okay. Screenwriters Billy Wilder and I.A.L. Diamond. Band singer and ukulele player Sugar Cane, played by Marilyn Monroe, gave a fuzzy end of the lollipop speech about a bad luck, mostly with saxophone players, to Josephine in the ladies' room of the train during a late-night party with the other girls as she chipped away at a block of ice. She described how she was an abused, melancholy alcoholic running away from all male bands. Sugar confessed that she had always had bad luck with her lovers when she easily turned weak from music. She talked to him about how she inevitably weakened and fell for male saxophone players in male groups and then ended up being dumped by them. We are going to be right back with part three. The final monologue is in that. It is worth 7 points, and we're going to hear Janie first. So BRB, stay with us. Where's the stop button?